Well, soon after Dr. King won the Nobel Peace Prize, some Atlanta leaders came together and figured that they ought to honor him in Atlanta. It was far more controversial than they anticipated. There was antipathy for a lot of what Dr. King was doing, and the business community was not as on board as they had hoped. And in fact, there was one banker who was lobbying against the business community getting involved. But because of the leadership of four people in particular, Archbishop Paul Hallinan, Rabbi Jacob Rothschild, president of Morehouse College, Benjamin Mays, and the publisher of the Atlanta Constitution, Ralph McGill, they were able to push this thing forward and then win the support of Coca-Cola to put it over the line.
What did happen with Coca-Cola Company that gave that extra nudge to support the effort?
When there was balking in the business community, Mayor Ivan Allen went to Robert Woodruff, the chairman of Coca-Cola, and told him what was going on, and he dispatched his president and CEO, Paul Austin, to the business community. They met at the Piedmont Driving Club, and Paul Austin, in so many words, said, "We want you to know that Coca-Cola is an international company, and it can be based anywhere in the world that it wants to be."
Ooh, did that fill the seats?
The tickets began selling quite briskly at that point.
Maria, you've written about the King family and civil rights for years, right? Why was this snub different?
Well, what made this so important was because it was a night that ended up changing Atlanta. People from black and white came together, really for the first time. 1,500 people from Atlanta came, and all the angst to get to the dinner, it actually was pulled off, and Atlanta ended up looking really well. And I think that that's when Atlanta lived up to its name, a city too busy to hate.
Yeah, and that reputation was on the line with this, right?
Absolutely. I think every time Atlanta gets challenged, somehow it manages, maybe not in a very pretty and elegant way, but it manages to reach that test. And what I think was significant was 50 years later, hearing people who were actually at the dinner talk about that significance.
Let's talk about Coca-Cola, and either of you can answer this question. Were the Coke leaders motivated by morality or money?
The triggering mechanism here that sort of got everyone's attention was a story in the New York Times in December, top of the page on page one, that said that tickets are not moving. The business community doesn't look like they're going to pull this thing off. And that was a real jolt to the business community, and they did not want that embarrassment of failing to recognize Dr. King in his own hometown.
I think Atlanta and the Coca-Cola Company has been part of this, has been very conscious of what the rest of the world and what the rest of the country thinks of it. So a New York Times story really did wake up people's eyes. And I think Coca-Cola has been a company over the years that has wanted to be seen as living up and doing the right thing. People will say if the Atlanta community is doing well, Coca-Cola is doing well. I think that they were smart enough business folks who knew that if you did the right thing, it was good for business.
It's interesting you say that over the years, because just last year at the Super Bowl, Coke aired an ad featuring two dads, a gay couple, and people were talking about that. Is this a company that for its whole history, or at least the last 50 years, has really been pushing forward with social change?
Well, I think you can even go back to World War II when it said they wanted to have a Coca-Cola within an arm's length of any service person. And that's what gave it its global reach. It's been a pretty far-sighted company, and when you think of the leaders were all from, you know, really small town Georgia, it's pretty amazing. And what the Atlanta History Center did the other night, I think, was really special on the 50th anniversary, and Hank Klibanoff did a fabulous job moderating. It tied together what happened 50 years ago to today.
Let's talk about that speech, too, because it sold out. So not the same problems from 50 years ago. Hank, what do you think that says about the changes in the last 50 years? And what changes are we still looking for here?
Well, I think there's a great pride. And all these years later, the success of that dinner resonates. And it was just fantastic that the other night to have Ambassador Andrew Young there and to have Billy Aaron, who at the time of this dinner was married to Reverend Sam Williams, a very important African-American pastor in Atlanta, Now, of course, she's married to the what I say is the other Hank from Alabama, Hank Aaron. We had Janice Rothschild, who was the wife of Rabbi Rothschild. And we had former Mayor Sam Massel, who was vice mayor at the time. So you had four people who were on the dais 50 years ago. And so one of the interesting questions I thought that they answered was, so what did it feel like when you walked in that room? And you'd never before, any of you, seen so many whites and blacks together in one place at one time. And I remember Mrs. Aaron just said she had never seen anything like it in her life. It was inspirational.
And she said she hasn't seen anything like that since. Which was interesting, that kind of coming together, and it was pictures of the event showing these long tables where people are sitting side by side. And another person in the audience was Martin Luther King III, who was actually at the dinner. He was very young, but and he remembers it.
And talking about where we've come, they're looking back 50 years, but what questions or challenges remain? What haven't we yet accomplished in that time in terms of integration or racial issues here in the Atlanta area?
Well, we're far from where we want to be, I'm sure. You'd have to do sort of pick apart and deconstruct throughout Atlanta. Certainly, I think people worry that our schools have just so totally resegregated, you know. I think it's always worth the Atlanta business community looking at itself and saying, are we where we want to be? I think the academic institutions that are in this city, the institutions of higher learning, ought to be assessing whether they have reached the kind of diversity that would most enhance education for all. So I just think everyone has to stop and say, this is not a finished work, and there's much more to do.
And in the 1960s, there was a definite focus of a need to build those bridges, and many people were working on it behind the scenes and also publicly. I don't think you have that kind of attention and focus being done today. And I think sometimes we see the ragged edges of people not really focused on the need to build bridges, not just black and white, but rich and poor, Hispanic, Asian, all of the areas where our community has the danger of falling apart.